Good morning, everyone. We welcome you all to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with our topic or subject on sacrament. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And thank you all for joining us. We will start with the morning prayer.
I'm reading this morning from page 116 to 117 of the Blue Book. This is from an excerpt from one of her beautiful letters. When you are in perplexity or doubt about some important question that must be decided, keep your mind still, cease thinking, and wait that the still small voice may speak. No words may come to you, nevertheless you will have asked your question. Wait. When the moment arrives, the decision you will have. Cultivate the habit of trust by daily repeating, I am led by the Spirit of infinite wisdom. I consecrate my will, my judgment, my desire, and all my faculty to the direction of the All-Wise One. I shall hear, I shall know, I shall do right. When you have an earnest desire of the heart and there seems no way of having it fulfilled, cease thinking of the obstacles, of the impossibilities, and declare with an earnest and definite faith, in my Father's sight, there are no closed doors, no obstacles, there are no impossibilities. There is no malignant animal magnetism to prevent me from reflecting light. There is no self-mesmerism to hide me from the truth, or to hide the truth from me. There is no hypnotism, no mental malpractice to harm me, for divine love surrounds me. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful, thank you. Okay, the watch message.
Watch number 286. Watch lest you fail to realize the great need of yielding to the divine will. A child is self-willed and feels that its rights are being invaded when its parents enforce discipline. Yet when it learns that an untrained mind is not competent to guide one aright, it is glad that its parents forced it to yield to their greater wisdom. Mortal mind is incompetent to guide students aright. In humility, it must learn to yield to the all-knowing divine mind. Before it will do that, it must be disciplined and improved. And one of the great agencies Mrs. Eddy has provided for this purpose is our church manual. Those who endeavor to follow its God-given rules and bylaws will find the human mind retreating under such a regime in order to let divine mind shine through. Many of the experiences which we have, which seem to baffle us, are really the wisdom of God manifested in our lives in a way that will best rule out the human mind. For instance, if we forget or neglect to make the proper effort to think right under a human sense of harmony, may it not be the part of wisdom for us to lose that doubtful and stupefying sense of ease in order that we may have some incentive to drive us to make the effort to correct thought?
Thank you. Okay, comments.
Well, it's wonderful how the watch and the letter from Mrs. Eddy really went together, and it's giving into that divine will which is the hard part sometimes, but it's about being quiet and listening, right? And trusting.
Yes.
He is the all-wise one, so why not wait for him?
Absolutely.
The long it takes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I have found, as Lawrence read, you know, if you have a decision to make, you know, to get quiet and listen and don't feel pressured or pushed about it. And very often, and somewhere this is said too, if you pose the question at night before you go to sleep, this has happened to me so many times. You wake up and the answer is there. If not right first thing, which is often right first thing, then perhaps later in the day, it'll come to you. And then you'll say, oh yeah, I asked that of God earlier. And you always know it's God speaking because it's nothing that you have conjured up yourself. It just comes like a thought gently through your consciousness. And you can, for so many reasons, you know, what if you should move for big reasons, or, you know, what your lesson should be on, if you're writing a lesson, there are all kinds of ways, everything you should ask God the answer and he will give it to you. And often in the quietness of the night or in those early morning hours when maybe you're awake, things will come to you, important things, God speaking.
I love that. That's happened a lot to me. And I've been, you know, after waking up, thinking about things and then realizing, oh, I'm actually supposed to be doing something. So I got to get
this. Yes. So.
And somebody has to act on them right away, too, because I've had that happen when I've gotten an inspiration for like a Wednesday reading or something. I've learned to just drop what I'm doing and write it down. Otherwise, it's, you know, even if it comes, I'm like, oh, surely I won't forget that. This is a great idea. If I don't write it down, an hour later, I'll be like, oh, shoot.
Very true. I was just going to say that myself. Yes, you write it down. I think Mrs. Eddy had a paper and pencil by her bed to write things down as it came to her. God speaks quietly and gently, and yeah, you'll lose it in the busyness of the day. Bruce?
For me, as a practical matter, you know, this yielding to God and obeying him, I found that if I get it straight in my mind first, yes, God, I want to do what your will is, and I do not have any will of my own that I'm going to try to push. And then when it comes time to act, well, you take the best step that you can at the moment. But while you're taking that step, you keep your eyes and ears open for further direction. You know, you don't push it. And if it happens to be wrong, you're ready to turn around and make it right. But if it is right, you know, otherwise you wouldn't have heard it. And another thing that helps me immensely is to try to have my life as orderly as possible. How can God be heard if there's confusion around? It doesn't happen to me. So I make a strong effort to try to get as much order into my life as possible. Makes it much easier to hear that divine calling.
One of my favorite quotes from Martha Wilcox is, prepared thought is a doorway through which revelation comes. So
wow.
You got to be ready.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. And the orderliness, you know, and that in your mind should be orderly, not a big jumble of things. You go to bed at night. No, you're mad at this one. And what happened? And I didn't finish this job. And you're just a big jumble. Then it's hard to think clearly, but that's why we keep our gratitude journal and, make sure we're not angry with anyone, that there's no resentment, that you've decided that someone was irritating you during the day. You can't allow those things. Your slate must be clear so God can write on that clear slate and give you his instruction and guidance. If you find yourself getting in a jumble, then you've got to stop and unwind those snarls. You can't just push your way through it.
Humility is that I mentioned here. In humility, it must learn to yield to the all-knowing yes. divine mind. So it takes humility as the door. But if that's not there, it does close thought to what you could otherwise be hearing. But if you're not willing to humble yourself before him, then
yes.
If you're already full, why are you here? Why are you asking?
And you know, the journal writing, I find it so helpful, because we all say, oh gosh, time's going so quickly. Of course, we know there isn't any time, but it seems like days fly by, weeks fly by. But when you journal, when you write down really and reflect on your day and think about what you're grateful for, it cements it in your thinking. It slows everything down, so you're in the present and being grateful for this moment, this time, what God has given you. Sometimes, you know, I just write down the statements of truth I've liked or used. Sometimes I'm always write what I'm grateful for, but there are many things to write about, and you'll be surprised how very helpful that journal is later in life when you
go back and read it.
Yeah, you go back and read it.
Especially if you have a particularly hard day.
Yeah.
See all the good.
You see all the good that was actually going on, even though it seemed difficult. There was a beautiful article. Maybe I didn't bring it today. But anyway, that Carrie sent. It was about God's will. And to me, it was so beautiful, because it was basically saying, you know, it's God's will that you have health. It's God's will that you are happy. It's God's will that you see clearly. God's will is good. Somewhere we get in there where I think we think, you know, for some reason, oh no, God is going to make me do this. This is going to be just terrible. Never the case. Even if you think that, excuse me, or when you think that, it's always going to turn out well, because God's will is good. I mean, certainly you can see with Christ Jesus submitting to that will, and of the crucifixion, bowing his head, not my will, but thy will be done, Father. It seemed like the worst thing in the world, but the outcome of it, and how that outcome has lived and blessed so many for centuries. So you must approach God's will as something good, not something you're dreading or that you're fighting, that you really want your own will. And this lesson is certainly about will and human will and the disastrous results of it.
I've been really learning too that he gives you what you need. You can do it.
Yes.
Not just.
And I always say to myself, if God doesn't want it, I sure don't want it.
Right.
It's a good thing to go by, yes.
Yeah. Well, and that.
No, go ahead, Gary.
Well, I was going to say, and the reason why that is important is because of who you are. You are the manifestation of God. So if God doesn't want it, how could you even think about wanting it, right? If you're in your right mind.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you want it and God doesn't want it, well, then you're not in your right mind. And you're not being God's image and likeness. You're being a mistake. And that's no good.
Yeah, I mean, people can get so wound up in what they think they want. And maybe it's because it's what their neighbor has or what they, I don't know, just something that's driving them. That's not God's plan. And they do. You get in a terrible tangle when you do that. Terrible. And then you've got to spend time, Mrs. Eddy says, retracing your steps, because you did that. You weren't true to yourself. You weren't true to God.
You weren't true to what is real.
Especially if you look back in your life to things that you wanted but didn't get, and then later on it seems like a foolish thing. Like, I'm not even sure why I wanted that.
Exactly. And you can be so darn mad at the time that you didn't get it.
Well, there is a saying I heard recently that you don't really know someone until you see them not get what they want.
Wow.
From the true colors come out.
Yeah, good. Yeah. The other, Bruce?
Well, there's one more thing. It is God's will that you are useful. Actually, God is using you to do something very helpful and beneficial. You have a purpose for being here. There's a reason why you exist. And this is another one of these good will of God, that you are useful and helpful in some way. God has given you a gift and a place to use it.
Thank you. Yes. If you're breathless in any way, it's because you're not bowing to his will. You aren't really found what it is he wants you to do. Sometimes it takes a little while, but other times you'll just know. It'll be so strong in you and you haven't had it strangled out of you, so to speak.
Otherwise, why would God go to the trouble of creating you?
We all have a divine.
And at the same time, when we do God's will and we are attuned to divine mind and doing what we need to do, it gets us away from trouble because we are busy doing God's business and God's will.
Yes. Almost in every list of what makes a person happy, having this purpose in life, a divine purpose, a good purpose, is on that list. You cannot live for yourself. You cannot live because you want a nice home and two children and this and that and what you think is your perfect little life.
And be happy.
And that it is a definition of hell. That selfish existence is hell. It has nothing to do with Christian Science. And if you haven't found it out yet, you will, because I know it's no fun. You have to have a bigger purpose, and as this golden text so beautifully states, Lord, what would you have me to do? Mm-hmm. And who is it? Where was that taken from? Who said that? Who?
Mississippi.
No. Not, this is Acts.
The golden text.
The golden text. Paul. Mm-hmm. Paul. Yep. Thank you. And I found it very interesting because when I have various Bibles, mostly the King James Version, but I have a few others. And this one is from, I don't know, is it one of the new standard ones or something? Find it. But anyway, well, first I'll read you what the King James Version says, which is, of course, where this was taken from. Paul. You know what happened to him, and as he journeyed, he came near Damascus, and suddenly there shined round about him a light from heaven, and he fell to the earth and heard a voice saying unto him, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And he said, Who art thou, Lord? And the Lord said, I am Jesus whom thou persecutest. It is hard for thee to kick against the pricks. Mm-hmm. Okay, now that's the human will. Fighting with the divine will. And then, and he trembling and astonished said, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? And then the Lord told him. Now in this newer version, it says, Paul said, Who are you, Lord? And he said, I am Jesus who you are persecuting. But get up and enter the city, and it will be told to you what you must do. What, it skips over a very important part, doesn't it? What?
If Paul asked it.
Yes. It skips over the golden text. And that's how I found out, because I wanted to see the context of that statement. And I looked it up in this new version of the Bible. And it wasn't there. I said, how could that be? It's not there. It was a mistake made. No, it wasn't a mistake. It wasn't the King James Version that I was looking at. So, again, this is why it's important that we read the King James Version. Dale A. in Virginia sent us a DVD about it's called the King James Version of the Bible, I think, all about how that Bible was made and the work and all the people that went together and all the, I mean, years, right? They really poured over it to make that version correct. There's a reason why Mrs. Eddy picked it out. Bruce?
Well, the writing of the King James Version is actually a very holy activity. It went in excess of 20 years to put it together. But King James, one of the few good things that he did, he took the two opposing and contesting parties and got them together and said, if it's going to go into the Bible, the two of you both have got to agree that it belongs there. So these people that wanted to put forth their own will had to release both of it. We had to release it all and find out what was really true and genuine and what was in the original codex that they used as a source. Two opposing parties couldn't put forth their own will. They had to agree, yes, this is what was stated, and therefore this was included.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Very important. It's quite a wonderful DVD. I was very grateful to see what
was
done.
No, it's a great story, how it was actually written.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all we have to do is pick it up and read it.
So. I know. After all that. Now, something else in this watching point I found interesting. Said that Mrs. Eddy is provided for this purpose, and that's to guide students aright, right? And and ability must yield to the all-knowing divine mind. Before it will do that, it must be disciplined and improved. And one of the great agencies for that was what?
Manual.
Mm-hmm. The manual.
89.
Didn't say Science and Health or Prose Works. It said the manual, another list of things to read. I mean, I have read the manual, but not a lot, and really not recently. And so I had to go back and look. Yeah, she's telling us all kinds of things what to do. Certainly, the three daily duties are in the manual. And that we work with daily, because that's what they are, daily duties. And there for our guidance.
And the manual was written by her in the same way that she wrote Science and Health.
Yes.
In other words, God told her what to write. And that is why the manual is as divinely inspired as our textbook. And to violate the manual is to violate God's will. Mm.
And that's why we use the 88th edition. 88.
That's right. Because the moment she passed on, they took the 89th and changed it subtly, but changed it. So the board of directors would get total control over everything.
Which is not God's will, obviously.
Yeah. See how that worked out. So
it's also mentioned in Revelation, the manual. Science and Health and the manuals mentioned in Revelation. So that's what also told me you don't dare mess with this.
Would you give me the reference?
I don't have it at the moment, but when it talks about the rod, but there is a reference to it in Revelation. Yes, I will find it and give it to you.
Okay, good. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so it's well to go over it and think about the things we're instructed to do. A lot of it we were to do while Mrs. Eddy is here, right? You couldn't do things unless she was here. Of course, that was totally ignored. But it was interesting, too, this one, Obnoxious Books. A member of this church shall not patronize a publishing house or bookstore that has for sale obnoxious books. Now, how would you bring that, make that relevant today, or more relevant?
They're selling the Peel books.
True, absolutely. All of this obnoxious books about Christian Science. Well,
I had a friend who felt that the Science and Health shouldn't be sold in bookstores that at the same time was selling books that were unsavory, so to speak, mm-hmm. or magazines. It shouldn't be sold in the same bookstore. And there was a lot of discussion at our branch church about this. It was sort of, you know, but if you don't have the alternative or another, if they're, I don't know, it was very difficult to get through that, because it was, we want the science and health to go out to everybody, be available, but every bookstore, if there are any left these days, would have obnoxious books. So that means we couldn't put science and health in these bookstores. And that, so I don't know, it was something that as a branch church member, we were discussing.
Well, in order to lump the lump, it's yes. got to be in the lump.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. I mean, how could it be wrong to sell science and health? It would be a remedy, as something to remedy all this obnoxious stuff.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And Mrs. Eddy's day, she had to contend with this pretty much all the time. And she, through her discovery and her efforts to promote the ideas of Christian Science, she met all kinds of opposition. And in other words, she was face to face with the nature of the human mind all the way. And she put it this in Science and Health: he who knows God's will, or the demands of divine science, and obeys them, incurs the hostility of envy. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't mean the hostility of envy is real or has power, but it was a warning that, yeah, this is coming. The mortal mind, the human mind, needs to be corrected. So she had this in her face pretty much all the time.
Thank you. Yeah, but that's in the lesson.
But in the manual, you don't solicit, you don't go to bookstores that sell pornography or that sell, you know, drama novels, you know, that sort of thing. And today it would mean, you know, you don't go to the internet and cruise pornography websites, right?
Thank you. That was going to be my obnoxious websites. That's how you bring it in today. There's so many obnoxious websites, and if you're on them, you're disobeying the manual.
Yes.
And there's a reason why Congress is, you know, is trying to ban TikTok from being able to actually be, you know, to be seen here in the United States. Not only is it full of garbage, but it's sponsored by, you know, the Chinese spy agency.
We have to be wise in what we do, and not stupid. And you should get warnings to say off things, and they'll lure you in with all this pleasant stuff, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden, gotcha. So we must be very wise in the internet, most definitely. And as far as, well, you can't go to a bookstore, but the people, obnoxious bookstore, but the people that need science and health, they're going there. So why not let it be available? Might be their saving grace. I'm sure it would be.
Yeah.
Someone might pick it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Where it was told, it was portrayed so beautifully in The Chosen, you know, when they went to the worst places, right? They went in the worst places, and for that, I forget the name, is it Syria? Philippi, I don't know, somewhere where there was just awful
Caesarea
things.
Caesarea Philippi.
Yeah,
Caesarea.
Yeah, and they were asking Jesus, why are you leading us here? Why are we here? And what did he say?
He came who he came for.
Yes,
they need him most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, they need the most.
Absolutely,
and he said, "Cousin wouldn't hesitate to go in there."
Right, John the Baptist would have marched right in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if God directs us, we do what's needed. We aren't stupid either or foolish, but if God is directing us, it will be productive. So, all right, so get to know your manual and what Mrs. Eddy is saying and why.
And does everybody understand why the estoppel clauses are in the manual? Because that seems to be the big problem with the board right after she left, and still seems to be a big problem with the board in Boston.
Well, they're the ones that weren't allowed to, when she was no longer here, those are the activities that were supposed to stop unless she was there to authorize them. That's what the estoppel clauses were about.
Right. And why is
I take because it to mean that she expected independence, that yes. Each church should rise or fall based on its own demonstration. She did not want mm-hmm. central control. Mm-hmm. You know, when she was there, she had the divine wisdom that she could offer that control, if you will, to the entire movement. But beyond her, you know, it needed to be left to each individual church. So I take it as the mother church would have remained, but as an independent church, as mm-hmm. would the other churches, right? They wouldn't be called branches.
And who would authorize practitioners and teachers and lecturers?
I imagine
there
God.
Need to be an authorization.
God,
yeah.
God is the ultimate.
Yes.
Exactly. Can anyone other than God authorize someone to practice Christian Science?
Yeah, but wouldn't effectively there would continue to be an authorization of them through the publishing society, which put the cards for the practitioners in the journal? When they continue doing that, let's forget about the publishing society being merged into the mother church, right? But if it remained independent, wouldn't it continue to put cards in the journal for the practitioners?
Sure, why not?
Wouldn't there be some modicum of approval?
Well, you're talking about a lot of things that would have dissolved. And if you have an independent church, it's a whole different thing. We're not going to have this big church, you know, listing in a big magazine. It would be like our church. And things rise or fall according to their merit.
Well, there would have been an independent publishing society, right? That would have ended.
Oh, yeah. No. No, because it was totally independent of the church.
Right.
And we don't have the privilege of knowing what would have happened had it not been taken over by the board of directors.
A lot of that would be speculation. So all I can say is what we have done here, when it was stripped of everything, this is what we've come upon through prayer and demonstration, you know, the round tables, the other things, the practitioners, all of it. It's just been what God would have us do. And that's a question that we ask every day of ourselves here. Lord, what wilt thou have me to do?
Mm-hmm. So, and thank you for not putting all of this information behind a paid wall. You know, we talk about the, you know, science and health being put in a bookstore that someone may or may not like, but can you imagine you're trying to introduce science to the world and they have old journals and sentinels behind a paid wall. You can search for a topic and it's like, nope, sorry, you have to subscribe.
Right.
It's just, I can't tell you how grateful I am that was the wisdom to share it freely. You have received, freely give.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been the motto of it. Absolutely. To get it out to as many people as possible, as quickly as possible, and as freely as possible. Because, you know, think of all these people all over the world, and there's all these, maybe not even knowing the language, you've got to sign in and pay for it. I mean, gosh, that, no.
Too many obstacles.
We thought, I didn't think deeply about it, but some people thought deeply about whether it should or have a certain area for members only, but no. Because I know how I feel. If I go on a website and I have to sign my life away, I do not go.
And you never go back.
I never go back.
This is free. And who are we to limit it?
Yes.
Yeah, this is the unselfishness. I mean, it's for the world. Mrs. Eddy everywhere talks about mankind, mankind, mankind. So where is mankind getting it if it's not free, really?
And it doesn't belong to us.
It doesn't belong to us. Who are we to limit it? It would be horrible.
And Jesus didn't say, oh, the money changers have a place.
That's right. He did not. Thank you. He didn't. So thank you, Tony. I'm glad. And we've had many people say that. It's all free for your using. And Bruce?
And also, regarding the organized structure, who's to say who can and can't practice Christian Science?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Betty told us that her successor was spiritualized man. Did you identify a person by name? She said, it is spiritualized man. That is her successor.
And Jesus said, you'll know them by their works.
There you go.
Yeah, and so did Mrs. Eddy. She says, Christianity is more about the works than the words. Mm-hmm. But yeah. People will prove where they are, and people will see where someone is mm-hmm. by what they do or they don't do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you'll arrive. We were told here about being in the practice. You don't go into the practice gets into you. And anytime I hear of anybody who wants to be in the practice or even wants to be a reader, it's like all these red flags go up to me. You don't want that. You don't seek it. It comes to you. It comes after a long period of test and trial. I like sometimes in the winter months, I watch Lord of the Rings. Okay. I was telling Gary. Anyway, you know, who was given? So there's this ring. And if you get this ring, you're given all this power. And all, of course, all everybody wants it. And all these evil people want it. So who does this ring get entrusted to destroy? Those of you who know the story.
The tiniest person who doesn't really want to use
it. The least capable.
Yes, the little hobbit who doesn't want it, who considers it a burden. He doesn't, he just, you know, and it's so hard and everything tries, all these so-called powers try to get that ring from him. And he just, he does his job. And there's some good things in that movie that I like about that and how, you know, he was entrusted with it. That's what the White Wizard tells him. And it was this little hobbit who did it. Nobody else could, and everyone was tempted to steal it from him. And you could always tell the good people, because there were a few good people who truly helped him on his quest, who even though they were tempted to steal it, they didn't.
They knew that it would be wrong.
Yes, and they also didn't want it, because with these, you think you want to be a reader, you think you want to be a practitioner, you think this, you think that, you have no idea what you're talking about. Just like with Jesus when
John and James said, you know, hey listen, would you mind if we sit at your right hand when we, you know, make our mother really happy? And Jesus was so distraught because he knew that they didn't know what they were asking for.
Yeah.
Jesus didn't ask the job that he was given.
He's doing good.
He didn't ask for it. And he was obedient. And he had no worldly ambition whatsoever.
And so it is. And so it will be. And it was also, it's called the King's Speech. I don't know those of you who saw it, but it was about King George. I forget which number he was, but he had a bad stammer. Somebody came and helped him. And in that movie, it was shown that this guy had no credentials, right?
Never called him doctor, right?
Yep. He had no credentials. And he was the only one that could help him. So here again, how do you know who's going to be good in the practice? You get fitted for it in ways, and it isn't anything you seek. You have to... I don't know. It's a series of things that happen and then you're prepared for it. So yes, that always struck me. And my understanding that in real life, that actual man who did this to help the king in this King's Speech was a Christian Scientist.
Yeah.
Yes.
No. They don't make that known.
They do not. No, you're right. You do not know. But if you research it, he was. And so how did it was this understanding of God and the Christ. So,
and it's compassion.
He has compassion.
His compassion.
He said it correctly.
I believe the king was Elizabeth's
father.
Father.
It was Elizabeth's father. Yes. Yeah.
I was going to. Can I go? I was going to bring before about when we were talking about Christianity, that wonderful quote from Mary Baker Eddy that says, "You have it as you live it."
Yes.
Yes.
That's the whole how much you're living it.
And she also wrote somewhere, and I'm paraphrasing, that the life you live may be the only sermon that some people ever hear.
Yeah,
that's right. Yes.
So that's why, and you know, when you're out in the world, and I know people are watching you, your grandchildren, people you know, people you don't know, they're watching to see, well, how much of this is she or he living? Many have been so turned off because they see the churches and then they see the biggest hypocrites there could possibly be. So they don't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah, that's why I thought I was atheist for a long time. Heck with church people.
Yes. Exactly.
I think the children, we have to be careful of the children. They watch everything. You might think they don't, but they do.
They
tell you some things that you never thought they even observed. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Our teacher told us, you represent the cause of Christian Science. And that's why I wear a suit to church.
Thank you.
And it that's stuck really with great. Me years ago. 50 years ago or 45?
I know. In those days, I'm telling you, we all came dressed up.
Yeah.
And even the children. Everybody was dressed up because you represented Christian Science. And if you look at the old-time workers, pictures of them, you know, mm-hmm. Big Bell Young and Kimball, they had their hats and jackets and their ties. Now, this is a no judgment because I know things have changed a lot. But I personally get dressed up. I'm like Craig. It was rather instilled in me. But I don't judge anybody else. You can dress however you like. Mainly, we want you to come to church. If we told the children these days they had to get all dressed up, especially the little boys, we wouldn't see anybody. So,
true. One other point was when we were ushers around the church at the various entrances, at least two, and we were told basically like be friendly to the community. And at the time, people often would drive through the town, and we would
wave
and so and feel friendly and look well kept.
That's right.
Thank you.
Two things you're really good at.
Yeah, Craig is
our
example. He's our great example. Everyone feels his love and his caring, compassion, and yes. Yep. Because then when they pass our church, they'll say, wow, that looks like a friendly church, rather than all closed off and all of that. So it's love that attracts. It's love that heals. It's love. Always love.
Love is life.
Love alone is life. So in that sort of what Tony was talking about, freely giving, there's a beautiful article, and we can put it on the website, by Louise Knight Wheatley, who was a wonderful early worker, called The Closed Hand. And she writes about an article that was in the Sentinel. And this is from 1911, which said, the closed hand cannot receive. And it's a simple statement, but you think about it. When your hand is closed and you're just, it's all about me, it's not open to receive as well. And she said, as this author pondered these things, a picture which hangs in a certain dearly loved reading room flashed into her memory. It represents a group of persons standing on a lawn listening to a woman who evidently stepped out on a low balcony to address them. The woman is Mrs. Eddy. She stands looking out upon that sea of upturned faces, a slender figure silhouetted against the sky, the face in shadow. But what a world of eloquence there is in those outstretched hands. Hmm. And the palms are upturned, giving, giving, always giving. And since the days of Jesus of Nazareth, no one has received in such abundance. Yes, is it not only in accord with an immutable law that she who gave so much should receive in like manner? Jesus himself said, "With what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again." And then, does the storehouse sometimes seem strangely empty, O troubled heart? Do we sometimes find ourselves thinking that Christian Science is not doing as much for us as it should, that we are not getting much out of it as we ought, and wonder why we don't receive more? Before becoming unduly disturbed over this, suppose we try the experiment of taking an entirely different point of view and asking, instead of asking, what is Christian Science doing for me, suppose we ask ourselves, what am I doing for Christian Science? Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, I'm not getting as much as I ought, suppose we say, am I giving as much as I can? Instead of saying, I wonder why I do not receive more, suppose we say, am I making the most of what I have? And it goes on about Saul of Tarsus, when he really changed and saw the light, he fell to his knees and cried out, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? Mm-hmm. Now, I may add to this, you can outwardly do a lot of things. And believe me, I tried that. But unless your heart is right, it's not going to work. I mean, you can, and we know that in branch churches, you can be the busiest person in the branch church doing this, that, that thing. But if secretly you're harboring things that you shouldn't be, and you're not obeying the golden rule or the Sermon on the Mount or the Ten Commandments, it's not going to work. It's your whole self that must be. Your whole self. You can't fool God. So yes, the outer deeds, doing this work for God, is very important, but it's not the end of it. Your heart must be right with God as well. And another article brings out, you know, you don't have to be in the practice to do this. You are in the practice. If you name the name of Christian Science, it doesn't matter. You can not be a church member. You don't even have to go to a church or go to know of Christian Science. If your heart is right with God, there we are. Isn't that true?
Yeah, the mm-hmm. pure in heart sees God. The
yes.
pure in heart. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take credentials. It takes your heart. And that's why anyone can do this anywhere, in any situation.
When with Mary, he's Jesus said, "Give me your heart."
Oh, and that
Mary Magdalene.
Yes. Another article brings out, you know, that serving and safety go together. Abraham, Jacob, Moses, Joshua, David, Solomon, and other great characters of the Old Testament Gloried in being called God's servants, and they thereby claimed preservation, dominion, health, deliverance, spiritual power, and victory over their enemies. Jesus, in serving his Father, proved that preservation is spiritual, and he passed through the ordeal of the cross and triumphantly emerged from the tomb. And in Mrs. Eddy's Mother Church of 1901 on page 1, she says, "Rest assured, you can never lack God's outstretched arm as long as you are in his service." Now, here again, your heart has to be right in the service. And in these examples, they certainly were. And we were given that statement often. And if you're truly serving God with a right heart, you cannot be without his outstretched hands. He will help you. He'll come to you. He'll save you. He'll do whatever's necessary so that you can fulfill his good purpose in you.
And that's because he is you.
That's right.
When your heart is right.
Yes. And, you know, security is mentioned twice in Science and Health. One that I love, security for the claims of harmonious and eternal being is found only in divine science. And then also, if living in disobedience to him, we ought to feel no security, although God is good. Now, we are seeing and hearing quite a lot these days about all these disasters. That's why we do our watches, so-called disasters. There are those who are totally protected. I know Elizabeth has told of stories of that with her mother. Totally protected through storm, fire, wind, wave. By knowing this truth, it's a total protection. And we pray for that, for everyone, everywhere. There's some things we can't avoid. They're lessons, I guess, that need to be learned, mainly to get on our knees to God. Once we do that, we are in safe ground. We are secure, secure upon this rock. I thought it was interesting this week in the lesson. Moses prayed unto God, the Lord, and the fire was quenched.
Yeah.
And like in Noah's story, who are the ones that were protected and saved and well? The ones that listen and obey divine mind.
Exactly. Thank you. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely, absolutely possible. We do not have to feel fear for our safety or our family's safety or anyone's safety when we're praying and working the way we are. And this is why we watch. It's what we do. And it's a good indication of how unselfed people are when they do these watches. And again, maybe you do watches quietly by yourself. That's fine. As long as you are working and praying for the good of mankind with whatever knowledge of science you know. So this is true sacrament. This is what it really means. I had some of you sent me beautiful things, which we didn't read, but another time. Now we will end on...
This is an article entitled True Service by Albert Gilmore from the 1926 Sentinel. And he writes, and this is an editorial in the Sentinel. He writes, "The desire to serve humanity, which is daily becoming more prevalent, is a commendable sign of the times. It springs from a generous wish to assist in alleviating the miseries of mankind, to have some part in bringing in a better day. All too frequently, men engage in the activities of life merely for self-advancement, for the purpose of gaining something for themselves, to satisfy some selfish ambition, to succeed for the sake of success. That there is a great awakening in this direction throughout the civilized world is manifest on every hand. The thousands of organized philanthropies, each of which has the purpose to minister to some specific need of humanity, are splendid examples of the operation of good in human consciousness. But in order that such activities may reach their highest possibility, that is, that they may render true service, their purposes must have their source in the same spirit of Christ which animated the founder of Christianity. They should learn the application of Jesus' words to his disciples on the occasion of the Lord's Supper, quote, 'He that is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he that is chief as he that doth serve,' end quote. Whoever would truly succeed, then, must win his way through service, through ministering to his fellow men. For truly, to serve men is to serve God. And conversely, service to God is service to mankind. How may we truly serve? The first requisite is right thinking. If our thoughts are right, our deeds are sure to be righteous. Holding to the true model and the divine idea of truth, life, and love, mortals will lose something of selfishness, of greed, of malice and false ambition, gaining the desire to do good by being good. Service undertaken from pure motives is true service, and it serves the double purpose of blessing the doer as well as him to whom it is rendered. When the desire to serve is the incentive, and wisdom guides our steps, we are blessed indeed in the opportunity to assist in establishing the kingdom of good. End quote.
Thank you. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
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 Thank you.